I'm Chris McAdoo, and this is Enjoyable Listen Time with Best Behavior, where we talk to people who make things and make things happen. And, with any luck, inspire you to do the same.
So today,
we're definitely going to edit.
We have, no, that stays. Today we have Austin Church, the man, the myth, the app-making legend, right?
I guess I'll own that. It's you had a nasty rumor that's been following me around,
and you hosted a hosting of webinars.
That's also a nasty rumor, but just can't talk about that in a polite company. You know, the headset guy. You always want to invite him to parties. Could you bring it with you?
Everybody needs AV. All right. So today on this is enjoyable listen time. I am Chris McAdoo, as per usual. Over to my right is George Middlebrooks.
Hey.
Keeping all of the dots and T's and I's crossed. I don't know a lot about technology.
Also, this is in mono, so they can't tell that I'm to your right.
Oh, good call. Well, just imagine it. Put yourself
Trust
in
me.
The situation.
In your mind's eye.
But what we're going to talk about today, enjoyable listen time, as our catchphrase says, is about making things and making things happen. And if there's anything that Austin Church has done since I've known him since 2010-ish.
Yeah.
Because we're super old now, basically dead. is that you are somebody that has done things. Like, you've made things happen, and more importantly now, you've made things happen for other people as well, which I think is really cool, right? So let's kind of get things kicked off. What's an important thing that folks should know about you, about where you came from?
I always thought I was going to be a college English professor, and I think that's good context because I never wanted to go into business. I kind of stumbled backwards into business as out of necessity. You know, it was probably 2008 when my dad and I had a come to Jesus talk about finances, and he basically said, without profanity, because he's a good Church of Christ elder, you need to get a job. And I really appreciate him for having that conversation with me because it didn't sort of give me the kick in the shorts I needed. There weren't a lot of full-time poet positions available
you
at
just
the time,
which
the
is
right
weird. Yeah.
I'm like, where did they all
they're
go?
Out there, buddy.
Follow your dreams,
this
buddy.
Recession. Come on. But anyway, so I got a job at a marketing agency, which is how I met George, which is
right.
Cool. And then got laid off 6 months later and suddenly found myself with 6 months of marketing experience and a chip on my shoulder because I still thought of myself as a writer, not as a business person. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, that's a good place to start. Not because we need to go on some rabbit trail about limiting beliefs, but because I just think it's important that we not pigeonhole ourselves. Mm-hmm. Like, you will end up doing more if in your mind you're not playing this script that, oh, here's the list of things that I am capable of doing. Here's the list over here of things I'm incapable of doing. Oh, this new thing that's really interesting to me, which is, freelancing or creating an app or writing a book or, refurbing a vintage Mercedes or whatever. Oh, I can't do that because I've never done that before and I'm just a writer. It's funny. I was still in my early 20s when some of this stuff was happening, and actually it was my mid-20s. And so it's funny that we haven't even discovered our own capacity yet.
Oh, yeah.
Right. It's not until for me, it's been in my mid 30s that I'm suddenly like, oh, like there are strengths and competencies I knew nothing about in my 20s that have emerged in my 30s.
Sure.
Right. There are things that I found out I'm good at, but I just don't want to do. Right. You can sometimes become cursed by your competencies too. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like just because you are good at something doesn't mean you should keep on doing it unless it brings you joy. So for me, in terms of my background and like giving myself permission to do stuff, a lot of it came out of recognizing the story that I was telling myself, and then checking that sometimes and saying, okay, is that true? Because I have found that if you believe that you can't do something, that usually means you can't.
Yeah.
And if you believe that you can do something, then that normally means you can. There are limits to that. I could believe that I'm going to become, you know, a professional golf player. I'm going to go on the PGA Tour, and I am going to win the Masters this year. I don't think that's likely, and I don't think that's just, oh, Austin needs to overcome his limiting belief, right? I think the skill just isn't there, guys.
But it's at least the first step that puts you in that direction.
Right, and maybe I just, you know, discover a lifelong love of golf, but with apps and stuff like that, some of these things, it's like, if you can drive a car, you can figure this out.
Yeah.
Right? If you are in your mid-30s, and you're not dead, then you're a pretty sophisticated creature.
We've made it. You've made it this far without swallowing poison,
or
you know, falling off a bridge or something.
That's
like that.
That's right. Eating broken glass, you know. And so we have these amazing brains, and we have this amazing problem solving capacity. Right, all of us do. That's what separates us from, you know, the other mammals. Yeah. Right, but. I think I had to give myself permission with something that was out of my wheelhouse. You mentioned apps. That was out of my wheelhouse. I wasn't even a coder. I couldn't write PHP, mm-hmm. CSS, HTML. I knew a little bit about WordPress, but that was in the dashboard. I was not ever fiddling with code. The only HTML I ever wrote was to customize some of my eBay auction templates back in the day. But I knew nothing. And so how is it that a guy who knew nothing about apps could get into apps, make good money at apps, sell his app portfolio? That seems like it should be impossible. And I found it's like, many things that seem impossible from a distance, like the closer you get, it's just one step and one step and one step. And suddenly you realize that obstacle, that insurmountable obstacle it was really just dogged persistence. Or I would say in my case with apps, and I wrote a blog post about this a while back, when I boiled it all down, it was stubbornness. I got pissed. I was too deep in to quit. And I just thought it would be embarrassing for me when I've told everybody, hey, I'm making an app, and I think that's pretty cool, and, you know, maybe you'll admire me because I'm making an app, right? I was too deep in to quit, and it would have been embarrassing to quit. And so when I stopped and thought about it, it wasn't intelligence, it wasn't cleverness, it wasn't expertise, it wasn't any of those sexy things you read about in business books.
Yeah,
it was, I'd better finish this because it would be embarrassing to not. And
back to that conversation about your dad in 2008, maybe it's time to get a job.
Yeah. And we're like, oh, and honestly,
don't you live near a Kroger?
I think the apps were a relief for my parents because they could finally tell their friends something concrete that doing.
Look
that,
it up.
Yeah. It wouldn't sound like that's a cover for selling drugs, right? Oh no, he's making apps. He's making apps. You know that iPhone you have? Like the apps that go on that, right? He's not dealing. He's not dealing. But he's not anymore.
Doesn't need to
because he's in apps.
Unless you want some. Good stuff.
He's got an app for that.
There's an app, yeah. It's not in the app store, but
geolocation, right? Yeah. The marvels of modern technology.
Well, I kinda wanna dig into that a little bit further. Not just in the apps, but a lot of the things that George and I have talked about and a lot of the guests that we have talked about are sort of overcoming those sort of interior obstacles that you set up for yourself, particularly the obstacle of folks that feel like you hear this sentence 10 times a day. Oh, it must be so cool to be creative.
I'm not a creative.
You know, like
that's frustrating.
People will say, well, that's not how my mind works. I'm not a creative person. I'm not this. I'm not that. And I'm always, you know, like identifying what it is that you are really saying. Like, I get it. Maybe you can't draw, right? Or you can't do this. But there are so many things that people are capable of that I think we put those self-limiters on.
Mm-hmm.
you know? And so what are, you know, kind of moving into some of the present day stuff that I think you're working on, like your consulting, I see that you're doing a lot of stuff sort of towards helping, you know, for instance, like freelance writers mm-hmm. or something, sort of how to get the right, how to get the right clients, how to get their stuff out there, and how to maybe just how to start, mm-hmm. right? So what's one of the first things coming out of your own persistence, stubbornness, building your businesses and stuff, what's one of the first things that you tell people that maybe ask, like, Austin, how do I start? What do I do, you know?
Sure. So there was a guy, he's a junior at University of Tennessee in Knoxville, where we live, and he is a business major, and he had applied to the internship program at Pilot. And we have a mutual friend, and we got together at a coffee shop, and he wanted to talk to me about an internship. And so I said, what are you after? You know, like, what's the end game? You know, what if your time is the input and the internship is the mechanism, then what's the output? And, you know, he didn't have a clear answer to that. And I finally, after about 45 minutes of getting to know him, which was fine, I'm happy to do that, said, listen, I don't have an internship for you, but I can teach you how to make money. And and it was funny because he stopped, and I think a light bulb came on. And I wasn't trying to be cheeky, right? I'm like, I don't have a structured program in place where you can be like intern number 17 and you can go through our internship program and you can have that little line in your resume. I don't have that for you.
Right.
You know, honestly, I don't really care about the brand name Wunderbar. It's cool. I took German. But if it means so much to you, just go ahead and stick it in your resume after this conversation. You know,
I had internship.
One conversation internship with Austin Church, Wunderbar LLC, right?
You will have learned something.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So he's a photographer. And, you know, so he's got a marketable skill set, right? And, you know, I think that's the first thing is like people often underestimate the market value of the skills they've already got.
Yeah.
So that was the organizing principle for our conversation. You've got this marketable skill set. You love photography, and yet you're thinking about going and doing this internship over here, mm-hmm. which isn't going to nurture something you love. It's not even going to give you more marketable skills. It really is to build your resume. Now, I think that's sort of a caveat where I think the type of professionalism where resumes were a helpful tool may become obsolete over the next 10 years because the traits and the aptitudes that enable people to excel in and thrive in a world increasingly globalized, mm-hmm. You know, saturated with technology and that sort of thing. I just think we'll see professionalism itself morph and change, and people won't say, I don't want to see your resume. I want to see your Instagram account. I want to see whether or not you're able to build an audience for yourself. I want to see whether or not you could set up your own blog. I want to, you know, that kind of thing. But
or just have a conversation and see what kind of person you are.
Right. Like, right. I mean, it's like, I want to see if, you know, maybe you do have drunk pictures somewhere, but you were perceptive enough to not post them on Facebook and on Instagram, right? Because you knew that a future employer might internet stalk you. But going back to this guy, teaching him how to make money, my whole thing was people overcomplicate business. If you have one paying client, one paying customer, you are effectively in business. So the thing to do next is go and get another one.
Sure.
And then you go and get another one. And I think I've seen so many freelancers and small business owners shop around their logo concepts and get that website in place. And let me go ahead and, you know, start inviting all my friends to like my Facebook page. And when I think back about how I got started, I didn't know any better, granted.
Yeah.
But when I got started, it was survival. I'd gotten laid off. I had $486 in my bank account because I was money stupid and I hadn't saved anything. I hadn't worked at the agency long enough to get any sort of severance package. I didn't even qualify for unemployment. That was screwed.
Wow.
And my dad and I had already had that come to Jesus talk about finances. So the last thing I was going to do is like call my parents up and say, hey, write me a check. So I write me a check for being your offspring. Yeah. But I hustled. And I think there are a couple things that I see trip people up. One is entitlement. Thinking that somebody, God, the universe, a past employer, friends, roommates owe them something. I don't think anybody mm-hmm. owes me anything. And if that's true, it means I've got to go out and get it.
Yeah.
Right? Now, granted, I know even saying that as a, you know, middle class, college educated white male comes from I come from a position of privilege, and I'm still not quite sure how to reconcile that when I have friends with different backgrounds of different races. Like, they're just like, yeah, it's easy for you to say, oh, just go out there and get it if you're a white dude. So maybe that's a conversation for another time, but I do think you kind of eat what you kill. And sure. I think when it comes to getting started with a business or freelancing, go get your first client. And when it comes to how to do that, talk to people you already know. John Jantz, duct tape marketing guy,
yep.
he's the one who sort of laid out the know, like, trust progression that relationships go through yeah. in a business context. And so it stands to reason that if you go to your friends and family, they should already know, like, and trust you. Maybe they don't. Maybe you're a misanthrope, right?
Back to the dealing.
Emerge from your cave.
Choose wisely those who you...
Right. So that's the first...
You come from privilege because you just use the word misanthrope.
Yeah.
I'm Jeez. Sorry. I apologize.
Right.
Yeah, tell us all about that English degree.
Come on.
Mr. Sorry. Professional poet.
I read Dickens at an impressionable age.
No, I want to come back to this, but I really want to make sure, because you've got a second point, but I want to make sure that we come back to the sort of the eat what you kill mentality,
mm-hmm.
the importance of starting off the starting off with business versus starting off with the expectation of business.
Hmm.
Right?
Like, yeah, it's a nuance, but there's a big difference.
So I just want to make sure we come back yeah. to that. But yeah.
So why do you start with friends and family? Well, because supposedly they already know, like, and trust you. And then what I helped this guy do is think about his skill set in terms of productized services. Now, that's a buzzword these days, but you're a photographer. People aren't buying photography. They're buying, you know, a photography product like senior photos or engagement mm-hmm. photos mm-hmm. or wedding photos or headshots. So what I helped him do is sort of come up with a menu of offerings that he could then go sell to friends and family,
yeah.
right? So he's a junior, and I said to him, you're a business major. All of your business major peers will be beefing up their LinkedIn profiles when they start looking for jobs. Most of them will not have a good headshot. Why wouldn't you find a decent space, get your lighting set up, schedule people out, charge them $50 a pop?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can, let's say, get 20 people who, and you know, you're scheduling them for literally 15 minutes each, sit there, turn your head this way, you know, bring a prop, right? Take off your Stetson, right?
bring a prop. Shirts and skins.
You chose poorly. Yeah. Sir, put your pants back on. This is going on LinkedIn. But that I helped him think through, I've got a skill set. Now I need to turn it into products that I can sell.
Sure.
Now I need to assign a price to those products. Now I need to go to friends and family and say to them, hey, do any of you need headshots? Don't sell them photography services. Sell them headshots, which is a product yeah. that they want.
That's
some
a thing.
Of them. That's a thing. And I'm always doing experiments just so that I, you know that I'm not full of crap. And so recently I'm like, okay, am I just a talking head? Is this advice legit? So I got on Facebook and I thought, I'm not going to sell copywriting or content. I'm going to sell updated bios and updated LinkedIn resumes and updated like about me stories or company stories, right? And sure enough, I got two clients out of that. And I am 100% sure that if I said, who needs writing help? Yeah, I would not have gotten a single message in response.
Right? Well, you're defining what your particular skill set accomplishes for your client,
which is what they're shopping for.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like I'm going to a restaurant and someone tries to sell me groceries, and I'm like, no, I think there's been a disconnect here. Like, I wanted a really great pasta. I don't want you to sell me flour and, you know, and olive oil and water. And that's what we end up doing. You're like, here is my finely ground flour. Here is my extra virgin olive oil. Here's my filtered water.
Let's figure out what to do with it.
And I'm like, no, connect the dots for me, right? And so young freelancers, what I help them do is I'm like, stop describing what you do and start thinking in terms of what problems the people on the receiving end are trying to solve, right? So I'm sitting there thinking, gosh, my bio is embarrassing. Like, it's 3 years out of date. And every time I try to write it, I either come across as boring or I come across as braggy, you know. But if, you know, the writer, Austin, goes and posts on Facebook and says, hey, who's having trouble writing a compelling bio? You know, maybe you're trying to strike the balance between humble and braggy, and there's a fine line, right? If you want help with that, I'm going to be selling revised bios for this price point.
Yeah.
You know, and so we moved through that, and now I've got him, you know, I just give him homework. And if he doesn't do the homework, then I stop meeting with him. I told him that's the way it is. I'm like, listen, there's an opportunity cost here for me. You know, it's actually fun for me to participate in other people's transformation.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
That's a great exercise for you. I mean, you can still turn that back around on yourself and learn from...
I do all the time. I'm giving him advice. I'm like, I really ought to take my own advice.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, that's a pretty good... You're like, wait a second. That's a good idea.
That's genius. I should really go sell productized services. But it's working, right? Like, when we check in, he's like, oh, I booked a wedding for October. And nice. It's like, oh, that came directly after a conversation where I said, the last wedding you did, have you followed up with the bride and asked her if she has any friends who are engaged?
Sure.
Yeah.
And because I know, you know, we know the best business comes through referral.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That whole know, like, trust thing is accelerated because someone else has basically given you a letter of introduction, right? Like, hey, I trust Chris. I trust George. You're going to be in good hands, right? And so, but someone brand new to freelancing is like, I need, and even if, you know, a guy like me says, all right, you've got your one client, time to go get your next one. And they're like, where do I go get my next one? And it seems obvious to me, well, you ask the first one to help you find the next one. It's called referrals. And they're like, oh, but you don't know this stuff if you're just getting started out, right? And I even meet established business owners who don't have a regular follow-up program in place so that, you know, I use HiRise. I set up reminders for myself. It's free so that every 2 to 3 months, I'm checking in with my clients. I'm saying, hey, how's it going? That last project we did, what were the results of that? Are you pleased? Would you write a testimonial? Would you send me a referral, right? I'm on your front porch. No.
I've been watching you.
Look in your back seat.
I'll take my finger off the trigger if you will send me a referral.
I can tell you've been going to the gym.
Right. Nice bathrobe. But all that to say, like, it's so easy to forget what it's like to not know what you now know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So for me, a lot of coaching people who are maybe a few steps behind me, a few phases behind me, is trying to get back in the mindset of when I was hungry and I was in survival mode, what did I do? I was sitting down to write a blog post about a year ago, and it was about being picky with your clients. And I stopped because I thought, that's not what I did at the beginning. Yeah. I was surviving. I took everything I could get. Because, right, you know, getting paid $50 to write a band's bio, true story. You know, there's the guy who ran the technology company who told me that, oh, we really all we've got for this web content project is $150. True story. And it's like, your technology company must be broke.
Yeah.
Because, well, generally, you know.
But you look at that later. You see that later when you're starting out and you are trying to get.
You don't know any better, right?
You don't know any better. And I, right now, the one thing that, I mean, I've been at this since 2000-ish. I mean, you know, running a business of one sort or another for nearly two decades.
He's weeping.
Yes.
Look at those tears.
These are I cry on the inside. But a lot of that talk, as you become more experienced in your career, whatever it is, you learn to see those red flags.
Mm-hmm.
Because when somebody, a technology company, for instance, says, like, well, we've only got $150, like, maybe 15 years ago, I'd have went, well,
I can use
$150.
Yeah, yeah. $150, wait a second. But now I have that same thought, like, wait a second, I know you just spent $100,000 doing your building.
Because you bragged about it when you showed me around the building.
And I know that you have, you know, these things, and I know that you guys have these clients, which I know bring you at least this much revenue, so you're not telling me the truth,
mm-hmm.
and or you have an unrealistic expectation.
Not being honest with yourself.
Yeah.
Of what, an unrealistic expectation of both what you expect something to be and what it's worth.
Well, you see me as an expense and not an investment, and I am not going to be placed in that box because I am an investment. Because if I do my job, I make you money. So come to me because you want to buy money.
Nice.
But
that should be the headline on your website.
Come to me because you want to buy money.
Although and it's going to be me next to a rented Ferrari, right?
Nice. Ooh, you could set up a whole Instagram separate life, right? Just based around you. People buying money from you, right?
That's right.
I'll rabbit hole this. We got to go.
It's easy to forget what it's like to not know what you now know.
Sure.
I changed that blog post. It's entitled Say Yes to Everything, because that's what I did, and that's what ultimately enabled me to level up. How are you going to learn about those red flags otherwise?
Right.
So I realized I'm about to deny some young freelancers their education.
Yeah.
And who am I to do that? Giving advice that makes sense if you're 8 years into it, but doesn't make any sense at all if you just got laid off. You're freaking out. You're not sure you're going to be able to cover rent next month. Someone comes and offers you $150, and that is a huge pressure release valve because at least you can afford your ramen, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So I've had to sort of change the advice I give, and not in like a paternalistic, like, I don't think you're ready for the really heady freelancing stuff yet, but more, how can I give people advice that they can actually use to thrive right now based on where they are when it's contextualized, right?
And help them understand that that's part of the path, that right now when you're 24 and you need $150, say yes to everything.
Mm-hmm.
But then
come back to me.
Take that experience and learn, after a few months or a few projects or whatever, like where you're losing money or where you can afford to go back to somebody and raise your rate, or say you can get more out of this project for, 15% more or whatever investment in me,
mm-hmm.
and then just kind of parlay that into the next thing and the next thing.
And it's like we all have to start somewhere.
And then you're 35 and you got a sweet minivan, and
those things can take so much abuse from chicken nuggets. I'll tell you that right now. They're like coated in slime that repels.
I'll tell you, Chick-fil-A. I don't have a minivan, but I think the key to my happiness is rubber floor mats in my car. Man,
when I bought that thing, the guy who sold it to me said, "You don't want these, do you?" And I'm now realized he was probably just going to turn around and put them on Craigslist or eBay.
Yeah,
I don't think he was trying to rip me off, but now I'm like, that van would be worth $3 if we did not have those floor mats, because you're just
hose
like,
those melted jelly beans
spill
right
it
off
already. How? We've only been in here for, seven minutes, and,
Well, all right, talking about minivans.
Anyway, yeah.
So, well, no. Anyway, back to
now
this
we're
podcast
getting somewhere.
Has been sponsored.
I know Austin likes to talk about his minivan.
That's right. If Honda wants to send us any money, it's fine.
Sacrificing your self-image for safety.
This has been the Three Dads podcast.
Yes. Well, let's all right. Let's go three dads worth. The other thing that I think that changes depending on what, you know, sort of again, kind of back to those barriers that you put on yourself or that you don't even know are coming up, right? Like there's a lot of things. You had talked about that sort of entitlement, right? So back to point one real quick about what do you expect of people and what should they expect of you? And I think a trap that not just professional creatives, writers, mm-hmm. artists, musicians, designers fall into is if I only had, right? So mm-hmm. like if I only had .. That's a great then point. I could do these amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
Where for me, I think of it as a challenge. I don't have this, but how do I succeed anyway?
I totally agree, 100% agree. And the thing that I told myself is if I only had more experience, right? And what I realized pretty quickly is that people were willing to hire a guy with 6 months worth of marketing experience, which I found really confusing. I'm like, why
are you even talking to me?
Yeah, but why?
Isn't there someone more qualified? Yeah.
Why would you entrust this project to me, right? And long story short, I realized it's because they liked me.
Yeah.
And I discovered that we tend to overemphasize expertise and experience and underemphasize likability. And it's not to say that when the dust clears, you don't have to deliver. You do. If you promise to do something, like deliver on time and on budget, that's another big thing that I harp on with, you know, the freelancers that I coach is like treat deadlines as non-negotiable.
Sure.
Even if you're a C-level or a B-level player right now, you will get rehired simply because you keep your promises, period. You know, but early freelancing is often a misadventure. It's missing the point, placing emphasis on the wrong things. Experience, the other one is skill. Oh, if I were only more skilled, I would get better clients.
Right.
If I were a better designer, then I would get better clients. And I'm thinking,
learn on the job.
Look around you. There is really, really crappy design everywhere, and someone got paid a lot more money than you make to put that out into the world. I'm being a writer. That's what I say to freelance writers all the time. Like, you've got some insecurity about your skill. Fine. Check out that billboard. Do you think you could do better than that? Somebody probably got paid like $250 an hour to write that really, really crappy copy.
Yeah.
So can we set aside the whole skills conversation for a second and talk instead about you really have no business acumen?
Well, I would also, when it comes to the skills, to anyone who says, if I only knew this or this, now there's the internet. So probably some of you are listening to this on the internet.
You can find it in your local library.
You go down, it's in the your car. What is it? The Dewey
Scare
Decimal.
The fantasy section. Yeah. The ones where the swords have names.
Yes.
It's my favorite section.
That is my I am more of a wizard guy than a space guy.
Like I
when
agree
it comes
with
to
that.
When it comes to fantasy stuff. Right? I'll take a Gandalf over a Captain Kirk. Now that may
I would rather
it's pretty divisive.
Take a sword to the neck from an orc, then starve to death in a zero gravity environment.
Done.
Well said.
Decided.
Austin's a writer. Yeah.
It has been decided. No,
you got a
is
point.
That domain taken?
Yes. But I would say for folks, you know, with the skills, right? If you want to learn if you're a designer and you want to learn a new program, if you are a coder and you want to learn a new language, if you want to do those things are there.
Sure.
And what I think a lot of people do also is don't take advantage of the time that they have.
Totally agree.
Even if you have a job or even if you have a job that you want to enjoy more, if you're a designer, if you're a business owner, whatever, you know, what is the – I think we've said it before. There's like – I think it's like a guy says like, what's your 9-to-5 but what's your 5-to-9? Or what do you do when the kids go to sleep? Are you watching Netflix or are you – writing.
You're hustling in some way, right?
And that there is something to be said about, you know, like, if you want to become a better artist, draw.
Improve your skills by all means, right?
You know, if you want to become a better writer, write. If you want to become a better designer, design, if that's for yourself, for other people. But those are...
And you don't have to have a client. Like, just exercise it.
Even the exercising of the art of whatever it is that you are doing, the blank canvas is so terrifying to so many people.
So,
right?
That brings up several things. One, this is just a pet peeve of mine. When people have offered me a portfolio project in exchange for a really low-paying gig,
yeah,
like, oh, no, this could be a really great portfolio piece for you. And I'm like, so here's the thing. I could stop talking to you right now and have a portfolio piece in 30 minutes because I could sit down and write it.
Because you can write it. If you wanted a portfolio piece.
So that's just like an aside. Like, you know, I don't even know how that came to mind. The other thing was when I was just getting started, like, I do not know what I did with my time. It wasn't hustling. It wasn't like, I mean, yeah, I hustled a little bit, but I totally agree that, you know, there are so many resources that you could use to go improve your skills. I know very, very few people who are packing billable hours, you know, sun up to sundown. There's time in there. Like, so if you really want to improve your skills because you think that's going to help you level up your business, fine. I think people tend to focus on skills, though, because going out and getting more business is uncomfortable. It's more comfortable to say, you know what? I know the Adobe Creative Suite. I'm going to learn Sketch rather than, is learning Sketch right now what is going to keep you from defaulting on some of your bills in 7 days from now?
Then not knowing Sketch is not your problem.
Right.
Well,
you got to knock that rock out of the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, dig into that. We've talked about this, you know, on some of the past episodes too, because I want to hear your thoughts on that business acumen. And I think it applies across the board, again, to creatives, to flower shop owners, to whatever, is that I think you come out loving a skill or loving a thing and not understanding that being a really good plumber is different than owning a plumbing business.
Totally agree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Being a good writer is a lot different than owning a writing consultancy. You know what I mean? Like,
and that's
typewriter.
Like the skills that I might sell, even like the consulting, is what, 10% of it. The rest are soft skills that I've picked up along the way. The first thing that I tell people in terms of you know, gaining business acumen is find a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Find someone who cares about you and, you know, has a vision for your growth and, you know, will be willing to talk to you about situations you find yourself in, because, you know, my business mentor, his name is Bruce Charles, and like, I can tell him about a situation. He's a really good listener, so he'll let me talk for a while typically, but you know, by the time we get to
good
the end,
thing, because you can talk for.
Well, it takes me a while. I have to say it before I know what I think, right?
Isn't that how that works?
I thought so. We external processors say to George.
Oh, look who thinks before he speaks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so discerning. But we'll get to the end of like 30 minutes of word vomit from me, and he'll say, sounds like you're not confident that's a deal you want to take.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh.
Oh.
Yeah. But we need those people who have been there, done that, who can say, you know, I can't say that your situation is exactly the same, but the last time something similar happened to me, when they were asking for something for free and promising you tons of future business, that did not turn out well for me. So yeah. If they're really wanting to, quote unquote, invest in your future because they can tell you're really smart,
there's lots of air quotes going
thank
on
you.
Here.
Yeah, thank yeah. you. Then the most obvious thing for them to be would be to pay your going rate for the work. That is the way they could obviously invest in your future as a freelancer. And if they're not willing to pay, sure enough, it was a clever line for getting something for free rather than truly caring about you and your future, right? So a mentor can help you navigate some of those confusing situations.
It's I'm lucky enough to be able to like a couple of our clients have become mentors, you know, for me. They're not necessarily like creative, you know, in that sense, but business. And it's somebody, it's folks that you can word vomit to. And a lot of times I will be, you know, like I'll tell, like, oh, this is my thing that's happening, or this or that. And by the time you're done talking, it's kind of the same. It's like Obi-Wan Kenobi kind of a thing. Like, you have answered your own question.
And you're like,
yeah. But all it takes is having that conversation. And I'm thinking of like, I've never really had like a capital M mentor, but I've always had a pretty good network. And like, when I got started on my own, you two were actually the ones I talked to the most, because Chris had been doing it for several years.
About 30 years?
37.
Yeah, 30, yeah.
40? I've been in
business. Yeah, let's see, you're 60 now.
When I started, we had to deliver this stuff via horse.
Right.
It'll be there in 7 months after half the children have died of dysentery.
Austin was pecking away on his old Royal typewriter.
You know, I actually do.
Mailing, of course you do. Of course you do. But yeah, you know, and it was, I just set up a lot of lunches with a lot of people who I knew were kind of doing their own thing, or had done their own thing, or were just kind of more connected to, I guess, how to run a business, how to get clients or whatever. But I never sat down and said, so how do you get clients? Like, I kind of had a good idea of that, but just kind of airing those ideas and getting stuff like that kind of just flowing back and forth really does kind of activate you and make you feel better about going out and getting business, or going home and making up a project, or you know, digging into something that you've got going on.
That's a great point.
Just kind of working your network, I guess, is
well, and learning that network, a true, like, it's a relationship, it's a two-way street for our business and a client, right? Like you were saying, Austin, like, technically, if someone really wanted to support you, they would pay you money to do the thing that you do, right?
Or then, like, why is that not obvious to a lot of people, right?
It's hard to deliver a writing project if you've got to work at Taco Bell 12 hours that day and go home and write.
Yeah, because like, I got into this to write for
pay me.
Free.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, nobody,
you enjoy
nobody
your work.
Gets in.
I do.
You guys have fun. Just,
nobody gets into, great. Nobody gets into, like, copywriting and designing Facebook banner ads because of their passion for it.
Yeah.
I seriously love making sure the image is precisely that number of pixels.
It's perfect.
So, but, well, something really, he said, oh yeah, you finish.
No, I've got to, because it's so important. Anyway, back to wizards. So let's just say,
can't shake it.
Can't shake
it. I need a staff.
So, I was going to follow up kind of on George's point real quick about, like, not just mentors but networks, and knowing that relationship is a two-way street, so that if you are taken care of for the work that you do, earning what you are worth, a plug for one of Austin's, right?
Somebody's been reading a blog.
But earning what you're worth allows you to do the best work for that client, who then in turn is more successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's,
I've been in that situation. Benefit.
And you can brag on one another and refer one another.
Exactly.
And,
well, yeah. I've been in that situation, I think you two have as well, where somebody's trying to talk you down on price and you actually see that that's working against their own self-interest. Like, okay, we can dial back on the price. Sure, that will mean we have to dial back on the scope. That's something you learn. You're like, you don't just have to do the same work for less money. Yeah. You could do less work for less money, right? Again, logical stuff. Some people are trying to sell you on, no, but see, we only have $13. And you're like, great, then I'll sell you $13 worth of
this
stuff,
service. Yeah.
Right?
But that shouldn't be hard to... That's a whole other conversation. That shouldn't be hard to figure out, though. Like, if you go to, say, a new client and say, well, let's get to the money. What's your budget? Nobody wants to tell you their budget. Nobody – they'll always say, well, we don't really know, whatever. Well, you've got a dollar amount in mind. Give me the dollar amount, and we'll figure out what the work's.
I've found that people don't want to talk about money if there's not enough trust there yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So the – that people, if they trust you, will tell you exactly how much money they have to spend, especially if you're like, listen, I'm not going to try to pick your pocket, but you have to understand, if you're building a house, then your budget is going to affect how big the house is.
Yeah.
This project is similar to that. If you have $10,000, we'll have a lot more options than if you have $150.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you have $150, you can go ahead and write me the check for the advice I've already given you
exceeded that.
But I want to go back to something George said, because I think it's really important, and it's the other – I mean, it's helpful for people just getting started. I just stumbled across some research that I forget which – it was an Ivy League university. I forget which one. But they found that we always underestimate other people's knowledge and willingness to help us.
Yeah.
And so because we think, oh, I can't reach out to Chris because he either won't have the right answer for me, or he'll stonewall me. He won't be willing to help. So we just don't ask for help. That is piggybacked on my friend Benjamin Coleman recently graduated from Stanford's MBA program, their business school, right? And he on Facebook wrote this brilliant set of 8 lessons he learned, much more succinctly than I would have been able to, right? But the number one was he noticed that his colleagues, he noticed that, you know, the people who were starting businesses, the ones who succeeded the fastest were the ones who asked for help the fastest.
Yeah. Hmm.
So ask for help. And the idea is that people will surprise you by what they know, and they will surprise you with how generous they are with their time. But you have to ask. You lose 100% of the time if you don't ask.
Sure.
The worst that people can say is no, or just ignore you, or say nothing, right? But I had an experience recently where I was on a call with the CEO of a publishing company. I'm working on a children's book. And, you know, old Austin would be like, oh, he gets that. He gets this question all the time, like, oh, you know, give advice to the young guy who's you know, just finishing up his first book, right? His first, like, real book that he's going to have printed, at least, right? And but I thought, screw that.
Yeah.
Like,
that
I'm just
means
reach
he's
out.
Got the answer ready.
I'm going to reach out to him, right? And I'm just going to say, would you give me advice? Would you, like, turn on the fire hose? Like, I will learn anything you're willing to teach. And sure enough, he was like, I would love to talk to you. Sent me his Calendly link. We talked on Tuesday. And it's one of those deals where he went above and beyond. He, like, gave me his mobile number. He's like, anytime you want to talk, I'll pick up the phone. And suddenly I realized, like, now, have a posture of humility when you go and you're asking for advice. No one likes to know it all. Hey, Chris, can you help me with this thing? And then I tell you how I'm going to do it the whole time.
Yeah.
You know?
You don't go looking for answers that you already have predetermined.
Yeah.
You go with questions that you would like the answers to.
Can you sign off on my plan? And it's like, why am I here? It sounds like you just want me to pat you on the head. You just want me to affirm you.
Yeah.
I had a mentor who said this: if you ask for help, you will get advice. If you ask for advice, you will get help.
That's good.
So, and it's not to say that you should use that little aphorism as a strategy for, you know, squeezing help out of people, but ask for advice and don't be surprised when people are very generous and willing to go the extra mile and say,
sure,
hey, yeah, I really think you should look at Facebook ads and let me introduce you to the person who runs all my ad campaigns, and, you know, I'll tell him to help you for free or whatever. And you're like, wow. Like, I have been dazzled by how helpful and generous people are willing to be if I ask humbly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And there's something about being young and just getting started and having that sense of entitlement, but also being insecure about what you don't know. And sometimes you're just reluctant to just reach out. So I really admired you, George, when you started freelancing, just because you did get in touch and we did go out to lunch. Yeah. And it was like, you know, we did have fun conversations about, like, okay, you know, what are you going to do about health insurance? And what are you going to do about this?
Yeah,
what are you going to do about that? And
that's all I needed to hear. Like, just
go just for it.
Just lay these things out, and it's all going to be okay.
Here's what I do, you know, with health insurance, or here's what I do with not saving for retirement. And here's that one's easy. Just spend all the money you make, right?
And if you can, spend a little more.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. What would life be without credit card debt, y'all? But all that to say, man, if I have one regret about being in business, it is being too proud to ask for help. I think we place way too much weight. We dignify self-reliance way more than it should be dignified. Yeah. It's part of our cultural DNA. It goes back to Manifest Destiny and like Ralph Waldo Emerson writing that book, Self-Reliance, and, you know, Thoreau doing the whole Walden thing. Turns out he was living on Emerson's property and receiving a sort of stipend from Emerson the whole time in exchange for doing chores, right? So,
not supposed to think about that part.
No, we have always depended on one another. Like, we are interdependent. So when you get into business for yourself, just assume that you're going to have to humble yourself and go out and say, I think I may have really screwed up this project. I think I may miss this deadline. I think, you know, like, admit your faults, admit your mistakes, learn from them, ask for help. And sure enough, like, I've even had to do that with clients from time to time. Like I found out that one of the social media scheduling apps that I was using, it freaked out on me. And I found a queue of 60 posts.
Oh, my gosh.
And I just had to sort of humble myself before my client and say, here's the screenshot showing you the 60 posts in the queue. It wasn't that I didn't do the work or I was lying to you. It's that it has worked correctly for over 3 years. And so I stopped checking in every week to make, sorry.
Yep.
And guess what?
Stuff happens.
He was like, okay, what do we need to do to make sure that doesn't happen again?
Right.
He was like reasonable about, you're like, huh? Really? Like, I didn't lose as much face as I thought.
Yeah. Right?
Have you been there before, Chris?
Oh my gosh. Well, a very specific story.
Should I begin?
Well, yeah, we had it. Same thing, a scheduling, a social scheduling app that like reset itself so that it started posting things on different accounts. That was great. That was a great day with a ton of comfortable phone calls.
That's something that we could teach freelancers. In tough situations, pick up the phone. Send an email.
Immediately. That is one thing. Like, and here's, I think this is a good kind of a segue as we crest, right?
Yes.
The wave of podcast conversation.
I felt some wind. That must be what it was.
We're cresting. It's Moana style. We are into the... But talking about being able to call somebody. And for one, let's say something good happened. Congratulate them. Say something bad happened or something, you know, whatever. Call and own up and deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Now, a lot of that comes with, speaking of, you know, the sort of the being willing to ask for help, the humility that comes, back to the Three Dads podcast, is the humility that comes with experience, not just in business, but in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're not talking about, you know, like, after you've had your heart broken, or you've gone broke, or you've almost, you know, like, after you have been through a lot of those things, if life doesn't make you humble at this point, for what you are capable of screwing up, mm-hmm. and or accomplishing,
yeah.
then... we must be living in different universes.
You're not paying attention to your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And keeping in mind that, again, back to those relationships, your clients, your companies that you work for, a company isn't a thing. That is a group of people. That is paper. Yeah. That is a legal organization, but it is people. And every single one of those people are also dealing with the same issues that you mm-hmm. are. They're worried about their jobs. They're worried about making payroll. They're worried about finding new business. And keeping that in mind, because I think a lot of times, especially on the creative side, I think people are very guilty of abstracting the client, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, you just see the logo on the face of the person,
right,
rather than the person behind it.
We're talking to X company.
Yeah.
But you're not talking to X company. You are talking to Bill,
mm-hmm,
or Nancy, or you are talking to somebody.
So apologize, or, yeah, you know, whatever it is that you've got to do, you know, be a human about it. One of the most important conversations I've ever had was, I founded a tech startup. We can talk about that another time. Co-founded it with another guy here in town. And we got...
Closeup.fm?
Closeup.fm.
There you go.
And we had to have a pivotal, I'll say, conversation with our investors.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation hit a different stride when I said, I'm a really sensitive person. And when you're not careful with the words you use in email, and you're aggressive or you're condescending, you're disrespectful,
mm-hmm,
to me or to my co-founder, that puts me in a funk, and I can't be who I need to be for this company, to grow this company, if I'm in a funk. And yeah, that's something I need to work on, but would you please be more careful when you write emails?
How difficult is it to... What, rule number one, don't be an asshole.
The best, yeah, behavior, rules of behavior.
That's right.
Yeah.
We got to remember to go back to those.
But, you know, what was interesting was...
But yeah,
I'm
you're a
totally
person.
Vulnerable in that moment. And what happened? What happened was, like, when I'm basically saying you could consider this a weakness, my sensitivity is also what enables me to be good at what I, uh-huh, do. It's a double-edged sword. But, you know, it's like if... It's like the puny kid saying to the bully, don't pick on me just because I'm weak.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I have feelings too. And it was amazing because that relationship has been cordial ever since. And I think that was a turning point precisely because vulnerability forces everyone to recognize we're two humans having a conversation. Now, maybe there's, right, conflict. Maybe something bad happened. Maybe I dropped the ball. Maybe you dropped the ball, whatever. But... one of my favorite stories that I've ever heard told was this guy named Carl Smith. He was speaking at a conference, and he had a big client, like multiple six figures a year client. And they were just second guessing every decision his team made. And he runs an agency. Ugh. I think it's called Engine Works, maybe N-G-E-N. Anyway, okay. He printed out an agenda. They're having a face-to-face meeting. He passed around the agenda, and the first item on the agenda was trust issues.
Hmm.
And he basically said, listen, you don't seem happy.
Yeah.
Because you second guess every decision we make. And, you know, they're like, no, he's like, let me walk you through it.
Hmm.
It's not good for morale on my side. Yeah. Like, we want to do our very best work for you, and you want our very best work. That's why you came to us in the first place. Our reputation had preceded us. But we can't do our best work if you don't trust us. If you want to be the ones who make the call about some of the creative and, you know, development choices, then why did you hire us?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you need to set us free. And if we can't make you happy, we need to figure out how to part ways amicably now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about, like, if they had decided to leave, he would have had to let staff members go, right?
Yeah.
And what happened? Well, they said, we'll change. And they did.
Hmm.
I just think that vulnerability is, especially if you can, without the heat, right? Like,
yeah,
if you can say, man, what you said hurt my feelings. You say that in a business meeting? Wow. Now, there are always those people who will take advantage of that, and they'll try to strike you down at that point. And I think...
They're probably the wrong people to work with anyway.
Exactly. I mean, it's all about fit, right? And going back to, like, why would I deny other people their education? Most of what I've learned over almost 10 years now is... I'm looking for fit. I have a niche, but even more than certain industries or certain types of work, I'm looking for certain types of people because there's something about the chemistry and those relationships that, you know, I can create a ton of value for them, and they give a ton of freedom to me.
that reciprocal relationship.
Yeah.
Just the fulfillment of having having a good conversation with somebody. Just that being it. Yeah. And if it's a business related conversation, then great. But somebody that you enjoy talking to and getting, you know, you're going to get something out of that conversation besides just progress on the project.
Yep.
Yeah. That's huge. And
it's strange that I've been in a position multiple times just to encourage people. There was this retainer relationship that, you know, I'd already sent over the contract, right? And the client who was a marketing director came back to me and basically had to say, my budget got taken away.
Woo!
And no one told me about it. I only found out this morning, and I'm really upset because this has happened before. And long story short, I had a chance to pitch a fit because this is a building block.
I'd counted on this.
Yeah. Or I could be a human and say, I'm so sorry that happened.
Uh-huh.
That must be really frustrating. Is there anything I can do to help? What are you going to do? And just have a frank conversation. Yeah. And where we kind of ended up is, sounds like you need to have a sit-down conversation with the other members of the team and explain, you hired me to do a certain job and you have blocked me from doing that every step of the way. And this is the most recent example of how you're not keeping the promises that you made to me. So are those promises going to be kept in the future? What assurance? Anyway.
And are you going to continue to expect things from me if I have no budget? And
if you can't, if you aren't given the bandwidth and the ability to do it.
This person had that conversation that day, and I got a text later that day, we're back on.
Oh, nice.
And I think that's like, that was really surprising to me. And I don't think that you can sort of be empathetic and compassionate with an ulterior motive. I think honestly that is its own reward. But that's the cool thing about being in business and saying, let's just treat people as people and recognize that we both have needs.
Yeah.
Can we find win-wins? I have gotten so much more business by turning people down because nothing gains trust faster than saying, I don't think I'm a good fit, but let me find someone who is.
Sure.
Or honestly, with the budget you've got, I don't think I can deliver the kind of value you're looking for. Maybe you need somebody who's a couple of phases behind me to help you out. Sounds like you're not actually wanting a consultant. Sounds like you're wanting someone to kind of sort of color inside the lines. And I'm not sure I'm a good fit there.
Yeah.
So because I like to be invited into the boardroom at this point. I don't like to just follow orders if I have no context for those. So,
well, that is a challenge unto itself from our side of the room, sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
The creatives being invited into that boardroom and those decisions. So for those of you listening.
Listening.
Oh, I'm going to put on my NPR voice.
Yes.
Oh God, that's your NPR voice,
Satan.
And that's why Austin doesn't have a job in radio.
That's why. Oh,
Mama always said I had a great face.
Things just got weird.
So, getting that space at the table and understanding that your contribution as a creative person, if it's as a writer, a designer, or whatever, is essential to that quote unquote bottom line performance of a company, right? Like getting once an idea has trickled down from the top and it's knocked down a couple of rocks, some goats have stepped on it, and it makes it down to the bottom of the mountain, by the time it gets to like, okay, oh, we need some copy for a thing. Or we need some, can you make a red thing? Can you turn that goat red?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if you're getting the stuff at that point, it's kind of like, well, shouldn't you guys think of, couldn't you do the, you know what I mean?
You're forced to guess what you should know if you're not in those conversations from like three levels up or three levels back, 3 months ago, whatever.
And then having those conversations early with a client also, oh, nice, dovetails us right back to the beginning where you were talking about not or you were talking about defining not what you do, but defining what you do for your client mm-hmm. and what they need, right? And so being able to sort of take what we do and make that into a boardroom decision.
It's, you know, I think we've all been in the situation where we fulfilled the engagement to the letter and the client is still dissatisfied. And when you do diagnostic, when you do in sort of autopsy on that, you realize, okay, well, you came wanting a website, but what you asking for a website, I'll say, but what you really wanted is inbound. You wanted leads to come to you. You wanted people to come to you. You wanted a marketing engine. You didn't want to, you needed the website because that's the vehicle, but you didn't have the engine.
Yeah.
And so I think being in boardrooms isn't a sort of self-important need to say, oh, I'm important too. I deserve a voice too. It's more, listen, I want to make an impact for your company. And I can't do that if I don't have some context, if I don't know the story, mm-hmm. what was happening at the top of the mountain that caused these rocks to roll down, right? Mm-hmm. Because I've actually got a lot of expertise at this point. And if you're sitting there telling me that you want to roll out Facebook ads, I'm like, great. What itch is that supposed to scratch?
Why?
Right. And what you find out is, oh, we just want to do digital marketing. We want to do pay-per-click. We want to have a reliable source of leads. And like, that sounds fantastic. And then when you do, you know, you delve in a little bit, you realize this company has never gotten leads online. Most of their best leads historically have come from trade shows, but they stopped going to trade shows last year. So if I'm really going to help you, like, do you really want me to help you? Like, if you really just want me to like come up with some marketing collateral and, like I said, color inside the lines, like this might be helpful to people listening. I've started asking on a scale of like 1 to 17, how much creative license do I have with this project? Do you want me to make it beautiful? Or do you really want me to just do
what? Fit your parameters.
Yes. Yeah. Do you really just want me to iterate on what you've already got and just sort of brush it up a little bit? So that's an aside. Like, that has been really helpful because I've gotten into trouble when I make something beautiful and they're like, yeah, that's not what we wanted.
Dial it back.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, so you want it to be ugly? Unfortunately, yes, because that's what I'll be able to get approved. And you're like, okay.
Oh, I could have known that.
Okay. But backing up a little bit, I really, really want to help you. And I'm happy to take some of your money, believe me. But if we get to the end of the project and we built a website when we should have been coming up, when we built a website and started running Facebook ads, when what we should have done is totally overhauled the strategy that you use with getting leads at trade shows,
sure,
which really would have moved the needle. And if we had really moved the needle, then guess who would be in a job with you for the next 3 years?
Yeah.
If I helped you drive 2 million extra in sales this year, guess who's not going to be negotiating with me when I give you a quote? You.
Yeah.
Because I've delivered the value, right? So if you just want a sort of lieutenant who's going to say, sir, yes, sir, I may not be the guy because sometimes I care too much.
Otherwise, you're just building a dead-end road for the sake of building a road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And good luck being able to accelerate down a dead-end road, right?
Well, this sort of – this is perfect, again, segue down the dead-end road. Well, what that, you know, says, what that sums up is be willing to ask uncomfortable questions, be willing to receive uncomfortable answers, and be willing to give uncomfortable answers,
mm-hmm.
right? Because what you're looking there, what you're looking for there is trust, transparency, right? Trust mm-hmm. and transparency. And if you can accomplish that and you can, you know, talk to your client about accomplishing that as well, you're in it for both of your interests.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I've even been in a situation where I've had to say, are you going to redesign and relaunch your website whether I'm involved or not?
Right.
And yeah. if they say yes, then I'm like, okay, I'll help you with the website. I think we should consider that phase one of a five-phase business development engagement, sure. though. So I'm not going to say I told you so, but I'm just going to say that's my perspective, where I'm coming from. Like, I think this is phase one.
Because as someone with that your kind of perspective, you can see further down the road that they just may not be able to see. And that should be a thing that they're hiring you for.
I mean, especially when I was building apps, and apps seem glamorous to some people still, and they came to me with a budget and an app idea, and I'm kind of like, well, have you done any market research? Have you validated the idea? Is there any product market fit there? Like, do you already have a waiting list of people who are like, I'm eager to pay, just give me the product? Like,
yeah.
And when you realize there's no launch strategy, there was no validation, there's no one in-house who's going to champion the app once it has been created, because I would always say, you need to build six apps, not one. We'll build the first one, but then we're going to iterate. And then we're going to iterate. So you need to budget for at least six different versions, because this app may not really be cash flow positive until version six.
Uh-huh.
So are you committed to that? And sometimes I would have those really honest conversations. I started charging for that, by the way, to like be the guy who delivers the bad news. Like, you don't need an app. You just need a mobile responsive website. Sorry. But
that's being a consultant,
I guess. You get tired of being the bad guy, you know, like, yeah. Got
sometimes
some more bad news for you.
Sometimes you just got to put on your business jeans.
That's right.
And your business
back
t-shirt.
To the business
jeans. Back to, yeah.
And your party socks.
Your party socks.
And ooh, baby.
Shirts and skins. Okay. So we've gotten through a lot of
something. We've gotten through something.
We have talked a lot about a lot of things, about building businesses, about trust, about transparency, about asking uncomfortable questions. So to kind of take this, want to take everybody's time into consideration. Speaking of building businesses, so Austin Wunderbar with a wonder.
Very good.
Wunderbar
with a voo.
With a voo. But one of the things that I wanted to ask and to sort of send people off with is one of your latest projects is your children's book, Grappling.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I want to give me a lowdown on kind of how that came to be and the Kickstarter campaign that kind of helped push it along and
yeah.
where it is now.
So it's a good story to close down with, because it is one about doing something that yeah. you really wanted to do. I really wanted to do, but maybe I thought I couldn't, because I, back when I was doing apps, I started working with an illustrator. When we started working together, all he had in his portfolio were oil paintings. And I looked at him and I thought, you can't teach that. And I said, if I pay you to learn Photoshop and Illustrator, will you design app icons for me? And he said, okay. And that kind of launched our friendship. So we worked together off and on for 4 or 5 years. His name's Nick, N-I-K. And anyway, I had always had this story sort of gestating in me that my grandmother told my two sisters and me growing up. It's a true story. And she grew up on a farm in Fayetteville, Tennessee. And, you know, they're a farming family. Money was not in abundance, and they were very pragmatic. And so she said, you know, we would fish any way we could, with poles, with nets, with their hands. And they called it grappling, with two B's. Sometimes it's called grappling. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's called noodling. But the deal was, they would wade into Mulberry Creek, and there were certain places where the creek bed would meet, like come up to meet rocks in the right way. And there'd be like these little nooks and crannies where fish could hide underneath the rock, underneath the water. Probably the fish weren't hiding outside the water. Right.
Probably. But they were doing a very poor job.
That was a bad idea, fish. So she told us this story growing up about this one day she went grappling with her dad, and she sneaks, you know, they would wade in, you kind of sneak over to the rock, you slip your hand into the water, you grab fistfuls of mud and you swirl them around because that makes the water murky and the fish can't see. Mm-hmm. And then this is the part that still kind of gives me shivers. You just put your hands underneath the rock and feel whatever you can feel. I'm like, that just like, ugh. So she would tell the story about sneaking her hands up underneath this rock this one day, and she feels something and it's not a fish, and she jerks her hands out and she's like, Dad, there is something under there. And it's, anyway, she did it a couple more times and finally just got so, she got the willy. She's like, I can't do it. I just can't do it anymore. And so being sort of the no-nonsense farmer, her dad, Granddaddy Wagner, we always called him. His first name is Julian. So Julian Wagner, you know, sort of bumps his daughter aside and rolls up the sleeves on that chambray shirt and bends over and, you know, like furrows his brow and hauls out a snapping turtle.
Whoa!
It had swum in head first, and what she was feeling was its tail.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
Good thing.
Right? Because those things will take your finger yeah. off. And so she said he set it upside down, like the turtle on its shell. And she's like, he's like, now what do we do? Well, anyway, I didn't say this overtly in the book, but the turtle became turtle stew that night.
Well, yeah.
Because, you know, pragmatic farming family. But all that, you know, I met Nick. Nick's a brilliant illustrator. And I finally, last fall, realized my kids are getting older and my grandmother is getting older. And I may miss my opportunity to take her story and have it beautifully illustrated and have it printed, and I like have obsessed over like paper weight and like over dust jackets and yeah. over the cover and all that. But the illustrations are finished
and like, they look great.
Thank you. I
get your email updates.
He is just stupidly talented, and he's actually got a full-time job at an agency. So he's worked on wow. us on nights and weekends. And so the illustrations are finished, and it has been a dream come true because he's world-class. And I just said, because he was like, I'll give you a great deal. I was like, I don't want a great deal. I want to pay you what you're worth, yeah. and I want this to help you level up. Because he wants to do this more, right?
Yeah, sure.
So
it's a portfolio piece that he can live on.
Yes,
which
exactly.
What a concept.
Practice what you preach,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like, don't
right
complain
on.
About somebody trying to shortchange you on a project and then turn around and shortchange another freelancer on a project,
yep.
right? So, so I'm like, tell me what you want to make. And he did. And so I put together a budget and then did pre-sales and then did the Kickstarter and ended up raising $10,000.
Great.
To do my children's book, which is like a dream come true. So I'm getting really, really close to the point where I'll be able to sit with my grandmother. She'll be able to read her story that I wrote to my kids, her great-grandkids. One of the little things that not very many people know about is my kids and my younger sister's kids and my older sister's kids and my three nephews, all their names will be hidden in the book, in the
nice.
Illustrations.
Nice.
So I think that's kind of cool. It's like, hey, go find your name. It's somewhere in the
yeah,
book.
That's so good.
I've got the printer picked out. Actually, I had a conversation earlier this week with a publisher, and they said they want to make me an offer.
Cool.
That's amazing.
So that is really, really new. Like, that came out of nowhere, and I like was talking to him. I'm like tearing up. I'm
yeah.
like, no, be cool. We're cool. We're cool. But
don't be too vulnerable.
So that is yeah. just a classic example of, oh, you can't just go write a children's book and find an, or you can, or yeah. you can say, what is the very next step?
Yeah.
If you walk closer to the mountain, maybe by the time you get there, you realize, like I was telling Megan, it is surreal. The illustrations are finished. I've dreamed about this book for 8 years and yeah. it's like so close to finish. I'm like freaking out. I'm like, well, what am I going to do
now? What?
What am I going to dream about now? Right.
That's a good
PGA
example
tour.
Of just kind of
orcs
to the neck.
Start naming that sword. It's just a matter of kind of riding those currents and waiting for the currents to come, because that, you know, the publisher came to you on a certain current of life. You know, you happen to be in that same, in that right place
and
at the
Nick,
right time.
It took him a while longer because he has a full-time job.
Right.
What if he had been... What if he had had more free time and we would have finished the illustrations sooner? And yeah. It's like
cranked it out, it would be out there.
Things start to kind of line up, and that's what's been so cool is how I've only had one person complain about the delays, and that's when I'm like, oh, I can refund this person, yeah. And I can say, here's a book that I really love. It's called Finding Winnie. It's the true story of the world's most mm-hmm. popular bear, whatever it's called. Beautiful book. I'm like, here's the link on Amazon. I wish you all the best.
Sorry, my art is not on your schedule.
Well, I think that is, I think that's a good place to send everybody out to lunch. I want to thank Austin Church for a great conversation about doing the things. And I think if you were going to send somebody, if you were going to send somebody off with an elevator saying of like, what is an encouraging word for somebody that wants to do the things? What would you tell them?
You're ready. Go.
I like it.
Woo!
Austin, you can find out a lot more about Austin at AustinLChurch.
AustinLChurch.com. You can find it at your local library.
Dewey Decimal. It's like
near the fantasy
near
section.
Near the fantasy
where
section.
You find all your internet.
Yes. You can also, is it grabbling.com? Grabbling book?
It's grabblingbook.co.
.co. Okay, so grab, because .com
Wait.
Was taken.
That doesn't sound all right.
That sounds wrong. Anyway, or Wunderbar with a W, with a Wunder. You can check him out on all of those platforms. Did you find it?
No. It's awesome that I don't know where my own book is selling.
If you Google
Grabbling Children's
it's
Book.
It's grabblingbook.com. Yeah. I don't know why I said .co. I do know something about domain names.
Like somebody had already taken
your
book
name. Crap, there's another Grabbling book out there.
Those darn squatters are so clever.
I will say, don't just put in hashtag grabbling on Instagram. That may not end well for you.
Oh, that's a different thread.
That's the next episode. Thank you so much for having me. This was a total joy. I appreciate
it. It's been a blast. We've talked about doing the things, and like he says, you're ready. Go, right? This is I am Chris McAdoo.
I'm George Middlebrooks.
And we thank you guys. This has been enjoyable listen time from Best Behavior. Where we talk about people. We talk about people. We talk to people.
She's awful.
We talk to people.
She's awful.
Who make things happen and hopefully inspire you to do the same. Thanks a lot. And we look forward to more episodes. Thanks for tuning in. Please share this episode. Give us reviews.
Preferably positive.
Preferably positive ones. And we'll see you next time around. Thanks.
BestBehavior.com